Good morning, everybody. And thank you for listening to another episode of Cinemafiles Radio. I'm your host, Steve Pisa, on a beautiful Sunday, September day. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It's a beautiful day outside. It's one of those days that's just filled with stuff. I woke up this morning, did a lot of activities, and then now I'm just beclumped to get here and do our radio show. I'm just so happy to be here today. I hope everybody here had a great week. Now, Blog Talk Radio is going through a couple changes right now through their architecture of their programming and what have you, so we might be on and off along the way, so I'm trying to correct the problem along the way. So thank you very much for joining us today on Cinemafiles Radio. We have two excellent guests today. We have Genevieve Gearhart. She's been in a lot of stuff. We'll get on her really soon. Genevieve Gearhart was in When the Fever Breaks. She was also in a producer on a film called Food Trucks, which I really want to talk to her about because there's a great actor in that film that I really want to talk to her about. She's also in a short documentary called The Shape of an Empire, which is fantastic. There's a lot of things to talk to her about. And we have Noelle Vega on. Noelle Vega is very well known in the stunt industry. I mean, he's done almost every stunt on the planet Earth. He's a producer. He's produced left from right. He's done second unit directing or assistant directing on one of my favorite shows, and I'm not afraid to say this, which is Happy Endings. I love Happy Endings. It's a great show. He's a production manager on Cue for Death, Green Flash, Dancing on Dry Salt Lake. We have a great show today. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's going to be a pleasure. It should go by really fast. For the first hour, we're going to have Genevieve Gearhart. For the second hour, we're going to have Noelle Vega. If you don't like listening to 2 hours of radio, well, you know which hours to listen to. Thank you very much for joining us today. Your host today is Steve Pisa. That is me. You can find me on akfcolorado.com. Also on Steve Pisa on Facebook. You'll find me at Academy of Kung Fu, as well as Steve Pisa as being a writer. I am both a Kung Fu teacher as well as a writer. I've owned a Kung Fu school for 14 years now. I've been doing martial arts for 26 years, teaching professionally. I've been a writer since I was 18 years old, so it's all 25 years. So I've been writing for a very, very long time and teaching for a very, very long time. Novels are my dream, are my thing, and scripts are a great thing as well. Kind of easy for me to a certain extent if you have the motivation, but books are just amazing. So usually at this time, we talk about what are our favorite shows. What are our shows that we like to watch? What kind of cinema do we like to watch? What have you seen? Our guest phone call today, we have a lot of guests listening right now. Our guest calling is 657-383-1444. Please call in. I would love to hear your voice. I would like to hear your opinion on what you think of these new shows that I like and some shows that I hate. I don't like the word to use hate, but in these aspects, I will use it. So let's listen to the first show that I've binged watched through Netflix, and I just adore BoJack Horseman. I love BoJack Horseman. So let's listen to a little summary. Meet the most beloved sitcom horse in the 90s, and 20 years later, BoJack Horseman was a star of a TV hit show, Horsin' Around. But today he's a washed up, living in Hollywood, complaining about everything and wearing colorful sweaters. And it stars Will Arnett, Amy Sedaris, Alison Brie. It's got a great cast. It's an excellent show. It's animated. Will Arnett plays a horse. It's a fantastic show. I adore it. I love it. So if you like shows like Wilfred, that's kind of subversive, then you're going to like this. If you like shows like House, MD, you're going to like this show. It's very subversive. It's very selfish, self-centered. The Mindy Project is a good example as well. I think the Mindy Project is a bit narcissistic. I do like the show a great deal. I love her as an actress. But it is a bit narcissistic. It is about her. So I love that show. I love it. So BoJack Horseman I dig this show. So it's on Netflix right now. You can binge watch all your episodes or string them along. I wouldn't. I just watch them all I want. So BoJack Horseman is an excellent, excellent show. Let's go on to another show that I binged and watched on Netflix that I just adored, which was House. I just finished the 8th season, so now I can firmly say what I believe about the show. So the show is really Sherlock Holmes in a hospital. That's what the show is all about. He's addicted to puzzles, he's addicted to Vicodin, at least that lasts for a certain amount of time. He's addicted to being a narcissist, even though it doesn't end that way. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet, this is an old show, so you should probably see it ending. But the ending of the show was fantastic. I really liked it. And only hipsters will say they didn't. I didn't like it. I wasn't satisfied. I was satisfied. It did everything it needed to do. It gave him a certain amount of redemption. It also gave him a forward progressive personality as well as storyline. And I like that. Instead of just killing him. So I guess I spoiled that for you, didn't I? But House MD started in 2004 to 2012. It has 8 seasons. And I would say that it changes around the 6th season and there's something brand new. It does have the same formula, but, you know, Hugh Lowry is an excellent actor. Omar Epps. You'll see the full cast if you check him on IMDb. But Hugh Lowry is English. A lot of people think he's American. He's English. Does an excellent job on this show. It's brilliant. The House MD, please binge watch that. BoJack Horseman, House MD. Watch it now. Watch it now. Because it ended in 2012 and you're still getting President Obama as president. Meaning, it's still relevant to pop culture today. So watch it today before it gets into the area of it no longer relies or applies to your life or your lifestyle. And not even your 15-year-old is going to understand what the heck's going on. So BoJack Horseman, I love. House MD, I love. Love. Let's listen to a show that I don't love. A show that's good, but not great. Kind of like McDonald's. McDonald's is pretty good. I like it there. Not great. So Alphas is a show that you can watch right now on Netflix. It is a sci-fi original. It was created by Michael Carnow and Zach Penn. It starred David Stratham. I really can't say these. It's a very difficult name. Warren Christie, that's not a difficult name. Ryan Cartwright. Here's the issue with the show, Alphas, that started in 2001 and ended in 2012. Here's my issue with the show. It's not very good. That's my answer. It's not very good. It reminds me a lot of Heroes, where it sets you up for something grand and then just lets you down. This is one of 4 Canadian shows that I've tried to watch that are just, it just really feels like Americans went in, filmed the show, and then abandoned it. That's what it feels like. Because it's absent of soul and personality. And even though when you watch, and I do recommend you watch the show, don't listen to people and their opinions. Opinions are like armpits. They usually have 2 and they usually stink. But if you do watch the show, it's the second half of the 2nd season that you will like. It's a good show going off there. But I will say this. They ended the show with a preconceived notion that there would be a 3rd season. And if you see the end of the 2nd season, that's the worst way in the planet Earth to end a 2nd season or any season of a show, not knowing whether you're going to have a comeback or not. And I'll tell you how it ends. Basically, everybody falls down and essentially looks dead. And you don't know what happened. Until the 3rd season, which is never going to happen because now it's canceled. See, this is what I do not like about the pilot world. The pilot world obviously does not have any faith in shows like Dollhouse by Joss Whedon. They do the 1st season. They do it with film. It's an okay season because it's a pilot show and he's thinking he has 5 seasons left. 2nd season, they say, we're going to cancel the show. He says, how about we do it on videotape? They say, fine. If you do it on digital, we'll let you go. We'll give you half the amount of money and we'll go. People felt passionate. They stayed on the show. The show even got better. What do? They canceled the show. That just shows you Joss Whedon's world. And what did Joss Whedon do? Joss Whedon went off to make one of the best superhero films ever made, with the highest grossing income of any superhero film ever created, The Avengers. Now Avengers 2 coming out this summer. A lot of people don't also realize that he penned the Wonder Woman script for DC Comics. And they fired him from that project, by the way, right before Avengers. I'm sure they're kicking themselves in the tuchus for that one. But it's amazing to me. So when you watch Alphas, it looks like this could be Chronicles, you know, the movie Chronicles. This could be a number of excellent shows that turn into something special, but it doesn't. It doesn't go anywhere. Huge disappointment. So Alphas, I would watch it. I would definitely watch it. Is it good? No, it is not good. Will you be wasting your time? No, you won't be wasting your time. Is it fantastic? No, it is not fantastic. So here are the three shows that I really like right now. House MD, love it, love it, love it. Love House MD. I love... So I get House MD... We have Alphas, which I don't really like all that much, and then we have what's another show I like? It doesn't matter anymore. Anyways, I've also been binge watching Battlestar Galactica as well. That's a fantastic show. If you've not watched Battlestar Galactica, you must get on that show. As far as movies out right now, there are no movies out right now. There's nothing I've seen out in the movie theaters right now that is worth watching. So we can pretty much skip next week and go on to the next. All right, we have a fantastic guest today. Genevieve Gearhart is going to be on right now. We're going to have a nice conversation with her. Let's welcome the fantastic, the amazing Genevieve Gearhart. Oh, Genevieve, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you. I'm so glad to have you on. We've been wanting you on for the past couple of weeks when the rest of the cast was on, when the few breaks, but we've had some other projects happening along the way. I'm so happy to hear.
Yes, I've been very busy, but I'm really glad to be here today.
Well, you know, any actress or actor that is busy is a fantastic thing for us. So let's get started. So you're not born in L.A., which is an amazing thing. You're born in Pennsylvania, right?
I was born right outside of Philadelphia. My whole family is from there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. And then from Pennsylvania, you moved to New York, which is a very typical thing for a lot of models to do and a lot of people going to plays and operas and what have you. So was that one of your choices when you moved from Penn to New York, or was that not even a fracture in your mind?
Well, you know, I think that I was always interested in acting growing up. I was kind of a performer from the start. But when I was little, I was actually a figure skater. So I was spending a lot of time as a competitive figure skater. And my parents moved around a lot when I was little. And New York was a really great place for my father working, but also for me to train as a figure skater. And so we moved there. I moved around a lot, but, you know, I ended up going back to New York for college, and it was really important to me to be in that city. I think it's an amazing city, and it very much shaped the person that I am, but also the kind of actor that I am, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. So competitive ice skating, were you going towards the Olympics? Were you going towards competitive figure skating? What level were you looking for in that avenue?
Well, so when I was in high school, I was pretty seriously competitive, and I had a choice around my junior year when, you know, most kids are thinking about, well, you know, what college am I going to go to? My choice was, are you going to go to college or are you going to train for the Olympics? And so I had to really think about that. And the summer before, I decided, you know, I need to explore some other options before I make that choice, because that's kind of a lifelong choice. And
right.
I asked my parents, you know, I'm really interested in theater and acting. Is there any way that I can take the summer off from ice skating and try out acting for the summer? And they let me do that. And kind of after that, that made my decision really tough. And so I ended up, you know, falling in love with acting. And I said, you know, I think I wanna go down this route. And my parents, you know, they're a little disappointed at first. And you know, they said, okay, you know what, if you'll go to college, you can study acting in college. We'll give you that. If you're not gonna go down the figure skating route, why don't we try that and see what happens and get a degree, but also continue to study acting while you're there. And so that's what I ended up doing. I kind of chose acting over training for the Olympics. It was a very tough decision to make as a 17-year-old.
Right. That sounds fair. I mean, they gave you the out. They said go to college, at least go to college, and if the acting bug still sticks with you, then stay with it. So that's kind of compassionate compared to other parents who say, you know, if you take up acting, you're no child of mine. Yet they want to go out and see as many movies as possible. Right?
Yeah, it was rough at first. I think that they were really nervous about it, and I think it took a couple of years. And then when they would come to see me, I was doing a lot of theater, and I think they came to a couple shows, and they really saw how happy I was. And I think they also saw that it was something that suited me and that it was the right choice. And it was really interesting. As a figure skater, I was the skater who, I wasn't the best at jumps and kind of the physical level. I was good, but I wasn't the best. But, you know, all the moms are kind of standing off the ice watching their kids. And I was the kid who all the moms are like, oh, your daughter, she's a beautiful performer. You know, so there was something even then that what I liked about figure skating was the performance aspect, the listening to the music and kind of telling the story of the music and figuring out a way to make it a more artistic endeavor, not necessarily about the jumping and the spinning. So I was kind of always out of place in that world in a way.
Right. You know, that's interesting because with figure skating, you need a certain amount of ballet and grace and performance, and it's so beautiful. That's why it's captivated so many Americans. I mean, when we watch the Winter Olympics, that's the number one thing we watch is figure skating. When you were figure skating, did you get a sense of drama or a sense of stardom? Because you have lots of people watching every movement you make opposed to acting. They don't do that. But in figure skating, they watch everything. How did that work out for you? And did that translate into acting later on?
I think so. I mean, I definitely feel like figure skating has influenced my style as a performer, for sure. I do a lot of, you know, I have a very heavy theater background. And so I also have a pretty heavy dance background. And there's something about it. I really feel like I learned how to be an actor originally from skating. It is about the whole package. It is kind of about creating a character. Every year you kind of get a different program. That's what they call it. You know, you have new music. It's a different routine. And to me, everyone was a chance to tell that story. And so it was always about creating this movement and this combination of dance and character. And, you know, doing it on ice is difficult. It definitely also gives you some discipline, I would say.
Right.
It is a very strenuous sport. It requires a lot of hours and dedication, and I think that has translated in my acting career as well.
Well, ice skating is intense, and it is incredibly hard, difficult art form. And I can see how the transition going from ice skating to acting would be there, very much there, especially when you think about all the discipline that you need, all the work that you need to do, the waking up early, the no complaints, the continually training, somebody watching you. But here's the question. Coming from Pennsylvania, and my best friend comes from Penn as well. I mean, he's a painter. I don't see how the acting bug could kick in somewhere in Penn, but I would like you to explain that to me because coming from L.A., I was born in L.A., and I'm a first-generation American. We're influx with movies because you're living in Tinseltown, basically, what you want to call it. But when you live in Pennsylvania, what is your modus operandi? What would focus you into that area, whereas in children in other areas, they're just stimulated by that world?
Yeah. You know, I really think it all had to do with my parents and my mother especially. She was really interested. I have a brother who's just a year younger than me. And so she really was dedicated into providing us with artistic outlets. So she wanted us to experience art as much as possible, so that whether that was taking us to museums or seeing theater or hearing concerts. She wanted to give us kind of a broad exposure to the arts. And I think that's kind of where it started. We're both artists. He is a musician. And so I think that's where it comes from. Not necessarily where we were, but her and kind of encouraging us to be well-rounded people and see as much as possible and have all these influences. And, you know, we were also close to New York. And my mother liked seeing theater, and so we would go into New York to see plays. And, you know, as a child, visiting New York City and going to Times Square and seeing that world, I mean, that was something I think I knew from a pretty young age, I need to live here at some point. And so I think that's what drew me in at first. And then that you know, starting to do theater and acting, you know, then you start to see movies and film, and you think, like, great, theater is wonderful, but there's also this whole other world. And so I kind of wanted my hand in both. I wanted to try both out. Right. And, you know, I was on the East Coast, so I did much more theater there. But, you know, part of moving to L.A. was definitely about trying this other world.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, I've interviewed lots of women, and what I find from a lot of the women out there is that they had strong males. I'm not saying that males are the one who motivate you, trust me. But what I'm saying here is that I'm seeing a trend here that a lot of the female characters out there that I admire or that I see as very strong women had strong support by their family, if not by their father being a male figure as well. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, I mean, my father was he was a great support system. He's no nonsense. You know, even when I was figure skating, he was definitely the one. He was there to congratulate me, but also to kind of keep pushing me forward. He's a great motivator. So he's always told me like it is, and I feel like I can trust him for that. He'll come see a show, and if he doesn't like it, he'll be like, you know, there were things you work on, and he'll tell me. So, and when I get a compliment from him, I'm like, wow, okay, I know I did my job. When he sees me in a film or sees me in a piece of theater that he enjoys, it's kind of like the best feeling in the world. He's this person who's seen me grow up, and, you know, it was a tough path. I chose two
That's
things
awesome.
That were very difficult, but, you know, he was definitely a strong, strong supporter for me.
Right, right. So you had that support system for you. Would you suggest that is important for other people as well, actors coming up, actresses coming up from different states and what have you, to have that same? Should they be looking for that support, or should they be looking for a support system?
I think so. I think it's so important to have a support system. It's a really difficult business, and it's hard. And I think whether that's your family, whether that's finding an actor that's been in the business who can help guide you, find a mentor, just someone that you can go to when you're kind of standing there saying, I don't know what to do next. Someone who can kind of guide you along a path, I think, is very helpful, whether that path be about the business or it be about the artistic, you know, the artistic value, saying, I have this character, I'm not sure how to get into it. Have someone to kind of go to say, you know, this is, why don't you try this? Take a look at this. I think that is so important. That's kept me going so many times. I've gotten great advice from actors, older actors that I've worked with, that it's they've opened up doors for me. They've given me little tidbits that have taught me so much. And I think, you know, you always need that shoulder to lean on.
Nice. Well, let's go on to some of your newest work coming up right now. Well, one of them is being Food Truck, and you produced this. And what's interesting about Food Truck is that it stars George Garcia from Lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was a really...
Right?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm listening.
I was just going to say that was a great project to work on, and he was especially wonderful to work with, to watch him work. That's another one of those examples of kind of just being able to step back. And, you know, I loved him in Lost. I thought he was amazing. I loved that show. I loved watching him in that show.
Oh, yeah.
And then to be able to see him in person on set and see kind of his approach and what he does and watching him work as a young actor, it was really interesting. And I learned so much just watching him and seeing what he brought to the table and how he kind of did little things that really kind of sparked the character.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, he's done so many projects. Food Truck was directed by Michael Rowd, and writer is Scott Fluler. Stars George Garcia, Lindsay Wolf, Phil Idrisi. And check it out on IMDb, Food Truck, 2014. It's a TV movie, comedy. I saw it on YouTube. I very much enjoyed what I'm seeing so far. I wasn't able to see too much, but I love George Garcia. I'm a huge fan of his. I'm a huge Lost fan. Charles Hoyes is also in it. Phil Idrisi, as I said before. So you produced this film. How did that come along?
Well, Michael and I had been working together on some other things. He's an amazing director and also photographer, and so he had this project that he wanted to do, and he contacted me. We were working together. We were friends, and he was like, "I want to do this. I want to do it now. It's the right time. You know, Jorge is available. Let's do this. I need some help." And you know, he knew kind of my background as an actor, but also I've produced a lot of theater, and I've had several different theater companies that I've run. And he was like, "You know, would you want to try this out? I could use you." And I thought, wow, what an amazing opportunity to kind of see this from the other side, you know, have a whole new chance to dip my toes into this other process. And I think that's really important to be well-rounded and to really know the full workings of a film. And so I couldn't say no. And it was a great project with a really funny, very funny script. So I was really excited.
So you produced plays beforehand then? Before you did the movies?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me
I had
some
a
of the
theater
plays
company.
That you produced. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a theater company in New York for several years when I was living there. And we mostly produced original work. So off-Broadway, new plays by new writers mostly. And then now I have a theater company here in L.A., and we're called the Speakeasy Society. And we do theater that's not in theaters. So we're really interested in making theater feel not like theater. People are used to kind of like sitting down, watching something. We want people kind of on their feet, immersed in this world. We believe in, you know, we do shows. We did a show in a brewery. We've done shows in homes. And so we're kind of putting a new spin on theater, trying to make it more like, feel like a movie. The acting feels more like you're in the middle of a film, or you're kind of playing a video game.
Really? So how did you get into producing a play? You know, it's kind of difficult because I've been part of the play thing since I was in college myself. I did plays in high school, but it's incredibly difficult to get in there and start convincing people that you can produce plays, put on shows. Did you find that as being a problem between the sexes? Because sometimes it can be an issue between the sexes of power struggles and what have you. Did you find that at all in the play industry and in the world of acting?
Absolutely. You know, the reason why originally I started producing theater in New York is because I wanted roles for women, and I wanted to see work produced by women. So it ended up being a company run by women. I think we were looking for our place in that world, and we said, you know, if no one's going to give it to us, we're going to take it ourselves, and we're going to make it happen, you know. And so we said, great, here are four women who are strong and smart and all have ideas of their own. We all did different things in theater. I said, I want to direct this work. And someone said, well, I want to be in that. And someone said, well, I want to produce that. So we kind of took turns, you know, working on each other's projects. And we were a group for about 3.5 years. And we produced some amazing things. And it was all about, kind of all stemmed from, you know what, if things aren't out there for me, I'm going to make it happen for myself.
Right. Right. That seems to be the complete attitude of the film industry attitude is, if it's not going to happen, I'm going to make it happen.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big fan of that. So let's go on to the When Fever Breaks, because this is a great project. We had the rest of your own buddies in here, as well as Tommy and Clay as well. And I'm trying to get his wife on here, but I understand she's a bit shy. I totally understand their perspective. A lot of people I know are the same way. But what was your experience when the Fever Breaks and with Tommy and Clay and Lucy Clay? I'm sure that was a very fun project. It looked a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. I loved working on this film. I had a great time. And it was an emotional roller coaster for my character. So, you know, there were times where I had so much fun, and there were times where it was like, oh, okay, this day is going to be rough because it's supposed to be rough. And, you know, you have
right.
a little fun with that, too. But Taimin and Lucy were absolutely great to work with. I actually didn't know them going into the process. I auditioned for them. And from the first moment that I walked into that audition room, I could just tell. I had a really good feeling about it. They were really, they had such great energy walking into that room. And from the first moment working with Taimin, he was just kind of so infectious, his energy and his passion towards the project. I remember him kind of reading a scene with me at one point in an audition, and he got so into it, he forgot that it was over. it was such an amazing experience. I walked out of that audition, I closed the door, and I was like, wow. Well, if I didn't get that, at least I had a really good time in that room. I felt really good
right.
about it. And so I knew, you know, I kind of knew from that moment that if it was going to happen, it was going to be a great experience.
Right, right. You know, the movie When the Fever Breaks, you know, it's directed by Taimin Clay. It's written by Lucy Clay and Taimin Clay. And it stars Chadwick Armstrong, who we had on last week, Genevieve Gearhart, who we have on right now, Ryan T. Husk, who we had on last week, with Dylan Wayne Lawrence and Cruz Malga. We have Sean Paul Piccinino, Violet Smith. We've had them all on the show, and we've had a great time having them on the show. Here's my question about When the Fever Breaks, because everybody had a different opinion. I liked them all. But what was your perception when you read the script and you're reading about zombies? Well, what stuck out for you as far as it being different or the same or something or a genre that you enjoyed? What stuck out for you on this film?
I think it really just came down to the characters and their relationships. I was really, I was shocked because you think zombie film, there's a certain, you have certain expectations about what the film is going to be like. And this was so different. And, you know, for me and for the character that I played, it was all about this mother and her daughter and their relationship and how she's basically trying to save her daughter and make sure her daughter is going to survive this, you know, crazy apocalypse situation. And I'd never seen something like that before. And it was just really interesting to me. It was so different than I expected when I opened the script. I was like, okay, I know what this is going to be. And then I was really blown away by the strength of the relationships and the situation and how it was so human for a zombie movie. It was all about human relationships. And I think that's what makes the film so strong, are these characters.
Right.
They're real characters who are put in a horrible situation, and they have to make some really rough choices, and it's difficult. But it really blew me away.
What I really like about this movie is that it is split up between the cast of both male and female. Even though Cruise is a bit young, it does split them off as being male and female, and you get to see the different aspects of how the different sexes respond to a lot of things that are going on. Even though I wouldn't say it's a stereotypical, this is how I feel when a zombie comes after me feel. But it definitely, I do like the split. In opposed to seeing a male-centric film or a relationship, like Friday the 13th, where you get a relationship-centric mm-hmm. film, right? This film is quite different, where it's more about like home invasion to a certain extent, where it's almost like a horror that happens to a particular family. Did you feel the same way when you're filming the film?
Absolutely. I mean, it is. It's this group of friends and family that are trapped in this house together. And it is, they feel like family. I mean, the character, my character, Sky, and Violet Smith's character, Claire, they've been best friends. They were young, you know, and then they're right. put in this situation together, and it's really hard on their relationship. Very difficult. So you have this group that is so close, and you kind of see what happens when they're getting pulled and torn in different directions. So even, it's like the zombies are all on the outside, and you're stuck in the center of this storm with this very close group of people.
Right. Right. You know, it's very interesting. I'm looking at your resume, and your resume actually reflects a lot of my upbringing in the areas that I grew up in. You know, meaning the you went to CalArts. CalArts is a very big school in California. Did you enjoy your stay in CalArts?
Oh, I loved CalArts. It was an amazing experience. That's one of the reasons why I came to LA. I was living in New York, and I was looking for a change, and I wanted to study more. I wanted to study acting more, and I was looking at programs, and CalArts, they blew me away. I went in for an audition, and I was like, these are my people. I love this place. The training is amazing there. They prepare you for this world. They have such a good mixture of film and theater and experimental training and classical training. I mean, the teachers are fantastic. I mean, I got, because of CalArts, the day after I graduated, I was in rehearsal for an amazing show at the Getty Villa, where I worked with Ron Cephas Jones, who is an amazing television and film actor. It was an incredible experience. They've given me so many opportunities.
Right. You know, did you go to the Middlesex University in London? Am I correct on this one?
I went there. That's when I was telling you that I took a summer off when I was in high school to decide if I wanted to continue figure skating or if maybe I wanted to go and down the acting realm. My high school had a study abroad program there. And so that's where I went. I took some college classes as a high school student at Middlesex University and got some amazing Shakespeare training. And also I got to see incredible theater while I was there. It was a formative experience. That's what changed it for me. That's the moment doing that program.
That seems like an insane change. That is an incredible experience. How did you go from London, from going to acting with these brilliant actors, these actors that are, you know, been doing it for a lot longer than we have. Let's just put it that way. And then you come back to America. How do you? Because I've been to Europe since I was a little boy. I'm first generation American, so I was able to go to Europe and see plays and operas and all those things. And come back to America and go, is this like a student project? What's going on here? did you get a sense of that sometimes? And you it's kind of hodgepodge. It's a little stuck up, but it's totally acceptable. You come back from Europe, you see how well they're doing. You come back to America, and you're like, is this summer stock or something? What's going on here? Did you feel that, or did you just have to close your ears and keep on going? How did you feel?
I mean, I think that it just spurs you to keep going yourself. And I mean, I think that's something for me that I saw these amazing actors and I got to work with them and I thought, how can I be more like them? So for me, you know, you get stuck in bad things sometimes, but you kind of can't dwell on that. You need to say to yourself, what can I do to be better? How can I keep improving myself? And so it was just kind of like the bar was raised for me. And I kind of took that and I said, great, I know where I'm working, where I'm going. I need to work towards that because they are amazing. They all started somewhere too. They were once me, you know, they were little old me once. And so I need to follow in their footsteps and, you know, go after what they went after. And, you know, it definitely, that's another reason why I think I ended up making my own work. And I just wanted it to be as good as I could possibly make it.
Nice. You know, I'm looking at your resume and you know, you've got so many things going on there. I mean, I'm looking at your plays and I just love it. The M Game, Big Love, you know, Reconstruction, Relentless Pursuit of the Lady, which were done at CalArts, by the way, the Fairy Bug, Rabbit in Blue, and then we go to Edinburgh Festival Fringe, we go to Hotel Delvere and Gods and, you know, Blue Sky and Lemonation, Midsummer Night's Dream, which I hate to say is not my favorite, but I will watch it anytime I can. Mostly because, you know, I've been in play since I was young. You know, as soon as I see that donkey head go on, I'm like, oh, my God, this is like my town. I don't want to watch this anymore. That brings me on to a good question. You know, and you are an actor, so you sort of have to act. Is there any play out there? Because I have my three plays that I despise. Do you have your three plays that you love, 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 love? And maybe one play that isn't your cup of tea.
Well, okay, this is very kind of, I think it's a little boring, but a play that I absolutely love is Macbeth. And I know it's a very standard answer, but Lady Macbeth, it's a character that I've dabbled in. It's a character that as I get older, I'm dying for the chance to play again, you know, at the age that she actually should be. And I think it's an amazing, amazing play. You know, there are lots of plays out there that aren't that great. I don't know that I can pick one, you know, pick one out. But I mean, it's a thing. Like I said, you're in projects that you don't love or, you know, you think we're going to go a different way. And I try always, no matter what it is, to find at least one good thing and say, this is why I'm doing this project. And I'm going to make it worth it no matter what. And so sometimes it's about the people that you meet, you know, sometimes it's like, great, I'm doing this horrible thing because I met this awesome person and you know what, we're going to work on a project together. Or, oh, they introduced me to this person, and that's why I was here. So sometimes you got to take the good with the bad.
So what you're saying is that even if the play isn't your favorite play, as long as you're working with people that you enjoy, it doesn't really matter. It cancels itself out.
Yeah. And I've seen some plays that, you know, you thought were going to be really bad, but you get the right group of people together, and they can blow your mind. You just never know.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a play called Butterflies Are Free?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think you would be excellent in Butterflies Are Free. And you can see it on YouTube today. It was Goldie Hawn's film based on a play. And it is fantastic. I think you would be excellent in Butterflies Are Free. And I have not seen it done in quite a long time. So I would love to see you. So the last film that you basically finished was Rushkin and then When the Fever Breaks. What are you looking forward to after When the Fever Breaks? And When the Fever Breaks is supposed to come right now, it's in post. We're still doing some finishing work on that. Are there any projects coming up soon that you're excited about or anything you can talk about that you're looking forward to in the future?
Right now, most of my projects are theater-based, but in the future, film-wise, I'm really looking for more roles, actually, that are similar to When the Fever Breaks. I mean, something that was great about that project, I got to do a lot of stunt work. And that was something that I was surprised how much I loved doing that. I've always been interested in really kind of strong female characters, kind of, you know, roles. I think about, you know, the lead on Fringe, that role, that woman, kind of like detective, strong, carries a gun, knows how to fight, but they're sensitive female characters. I'm really interested in finding more roles like this. I'm so glad to be able to play this character in When the Fever Breaks, because that was exactly, as a younger actor, what I'm looking for to kind of develop myself and to kind of develop, you know, who I am as an actor. So I'm really looking forward to kind of people seeing this film and saying, like, oh, that's what she can do. I want to cast her in roles like that.
Right. Well, I'm going to give out some information real quick. I don't want to stop the interview, but I want to keep on going. But if you want to find Genevieve Gearhart, you can find her on GenevieveGearhart.com. Now, do you want me to put down the phone number? Because it's on your resume. Do you want me to say that as well, or do you want people to find it themselves?
I think people can find it themselves on the website if they're interested in
It's on there. Please find it. Yeah, and then type in Genevieve, period, Gearhart, at gmail.com to reach her. You also find her on Facebook. We'll talk about all these in a couple minutes. No worries. I have a couple more questions because, and I hate to do this. I promise I do, but I have to say things like as a woman, because today, you know, and like maybe 2 months ago, I probably would never have said that. But now, right now, so many women in film are being attacked for being women, for just being females or having a female body and doing all these things. How do you feel about those things going further? Because your resume is a plump resume. It's a resume made for people coming from theater, going to TV shows, going to movies, being stars. How do you feel about that disenfranchise or that disconnect between the audience and the actor? And do you think it's going to get worse, or do you think it's going to get better?
Well, I really hope that it gets better. I mean, I can only...
Yeah.
I can only hope that it gets better. It's incredibly frustrating, and you know, it's a shame. I really feel like as a society we've moved on so much from that. It's sad to see that's still happening in this world. And I think there are a lot of great, strong actresses that are fighting that, and who are really trying to say, like, this shouldn't be happening anymore. We're way
right.
Beyond that. And so, you know, I look up to those people, and I hope to be one of those people one day that can kind of be a positive influence. And it's almost like you don't want gender to be a thing. We kind of want it to be erased in a way. There shouldn't be any difference. You know, it's we should all be equal. No one should be being attacked for being a woman. It's sad, but
right.
I do think that there are so many amazing examples of strong women in the industry right now that it can only get better.
Right. You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I see, and one of the things that have been my problem growing up, is a lack of faith. And I'm not talking about faith in any, you know, white-bearded dude. I'm talking about faith in general. And it has a tendency to make people kind of desperate in their existence. That lack of faith, that I'll make it, that I'm good enough, that people will want me, people will love me. And they make
mm-hmm.
these very odd decisions. Now, let's just say I'm a 13-year-old girl from Pennsylvania or a 13-year-old boy from Pennsylvania. And I'm like, you know, Genevieve, you obviously are going down the route of classic actors. How can I do the same thing, keep my integrity, and be a huge star, which I'm supposing you want to be as well? How can I do that myself?
I think, you know, as a young actor, the best thing to do is to find an outlet for that. So whether it's finding a class or finding a community, a theater to join, to start looking at, you know, acting on film classes. It's about finding a group of people who are also interested in doing the same thing that you're doing and working together. I think that's one thing that is really important in this business, is having a community. And I think if you can start that from a young age, and you create the support system that we were talking about earlier. So it's all about kind of following what you love. So if you think you love acting, great. Let's look for a class for you. Let's put you in a play. Like maybe it's taking dance lessons, but it's about starting down that track, finding that place where you can do that, and then going from there. And if you don't have that in your community, there are so many things you can do yourself now. You know, you can decide that, oh, great, I want to learn how to act. Well, maybe I'm going to watch some great actors on film and see what they do. And then maybe I'm going to, you know, use my cell phone camera to film a scene. And then my friends right. and I can watch it. You know, if you want to act, I want to act. Great, let's take some scene that's appropriate for learning and try it ourselves. And we can watch it and we can look at it, you know. You can show it to a parent. They can help you with that, things like that. So if you can't get in a class, there are ways to start to teach yourself. There are also amazing books on acting out there, too, to read.
Let's go into, if you don't mind, let's go into a little bit into the sex and drugs for just a tad bit second, because I know that that is an appealing thing. I was a photographer for 25 years, and what I saw a lot from models is they would drink wine or champagne just to chillax and relax. But I found that those models and those actors never really made it very far, but they were invited into that universe, invited into that world for them to relax and to meet people and this kind of thing. And they felt like, oh, wow, I'm part of the group. But it didn't seem like that in the end, because it just seemed like they've been drinking during a shoot or they've been doing smoking pot on the side. And it has tended to send bad messages across. I don't know if it's the same way anymore, but How would you explain to a young person coming to New York, Hollywood, Florida, Chicago, Seattle, any of the big states and big cities in order to make it big in any of their fields? What would you say to them when those kind of fields are plugging them in, pulling them in, saying that this is part of the industry? Oh, we do cocaine when we're models. Oh, we drink when we're actors. Oh, we write a lot and they're depressed when we're writers. How do we get away from those blocks that stick us in those categories?
It's really difficult, I think, for young people going into the industry. And there are people like that. And you have to say to yourself, that's not going to be me, because it's true. In the end, those are not the people that become successful. I mean, if you look at the people who are really successful, a lot of them are people who are such incredibly hard workers. They are the ones who are constantly going back to their scripts. They are reading. They are trying to become better actors themselves. They're constantly trying to move forward. So I think, you know, temptation is something that's very difficult to combat. And so you have to tell yourself, okay, great. Someone offers you something so you can relax. You don't want to have to rely on that all the time. You don't want to have to say like, oh, I need to have a glass of wine before I do this scene or else I'm not going to be good. You need to find that within yourself. You need to say, great, what is it that will help me relax? What can I do? Do I need to listen to some music? Is there some kind of music that helps me get in the place of this scene? Is it about maybe I need to sit alone for a minute and just think about these circumstances? But I think anytime you really start to depend on something in order to make you some outside stimulus, like drugs or alcohol, to fuel your artistic career, it's leading down a really dangerous path. And it might seem like the right thing at that time, but, you know, I've worked with people who have had that problem. And let me tell you, when people find out, they don't want to work with them again. They want to work with the people who are motivated and are happy and are fun to be around. And we all go through some really tough times in this business, but you have to turn to the people that you love and your friends and your support system to kind of pick you back up. And they'll give you a new perspective and they'll be able to tell you it's going to be okay. You know, turn your head in this direction. There's something good over there.
Right. You know what I love talking about people like yourself from plays and from classical acting is that they're very articulate. And when I ask them questions, it's very clear. You'd be shocked on how many people I've talked to about these subject matters, and it goes all over the place. But with somebody with classical training, it seems quite simple on how your mindset is. The very forward progressive mindset. This is the kind of women I love, the Joss Whedon, J.J. Abrams types, where they just work for what they have. They try very, very hard for what they have. They stay positive.
And you can see,
of course,
those directors, those directors, they use the same people over and over again because they know that they are talented and they are smart and they are hardworking people, and they clearly love working with them. And I think that's the kind of actor that we all want to strive to be. Of course, we want people to say, I want to use you again. And you create those relationships, and that's pretty amazing.
You know, it's funny. All my life, I've heard people say Hollywood and acting and films are all about people you know. But I've said it a little differently. I said it's all about who you know, but who you are as a person and how you behave. Because someone can, like, you know, Quentin Tarantino, a good friend of mine, was his location manager for years and years and years. I mean, you may know him for years and years and years, but if he doesn't like you, it doesn't matter. And if you're not likable, he's not going to put you in his film. It's just that simple. I mean, you have to be likable. And it's interesting when we're kids, we say things like, I'm not going to kiss anybody's ass in order to get a job. But it's not kissing anybody's ass. It's just being nice. What do you think?
Yep, absolutely. No, I completely agree. And it's about, you know, actually being real with a person. And not putting on this fake air of like, oh, you're so great, I just love you. It's about creating genuine relationships with people. Because if you're fake about it, you're not going to enjoy it either. You have to both, it's a two-way street. You have to like that person, and they have to like you back. You have to like working together.
Right.
And I think that's when you find magic between actors and directors. It's not just about like, oh, I'm working with this person because I have this idea of who they are, and they're supposed to be so great. It's about having a genuine connection, and I think that's really clear in films. You can see when the relationship between a director and an actor has been very strong.
That's awesome. Well, you're an awesome person. It was a pleasure having you on the show today. I can't wait to see you when the fever breaks. I'll probably be there for the red carpet, but I can't wait to see you. And how can we reach you? If we want to reach the great Genevieve Gearhart, how can we get in touch with you through all the sources of social media?
Well, definitely you can find me on Facebook under Genevieve Gearhart. You can also visit my website, which is GenevieveGearhart.com, and you can always find me on IMDb as well.
Nice. And you're a choreographer. Now, what do you choreograph?
Mostly I do work for theater, for plays, dance, but, you know, I've done a little bit of everything when it comes to choreography. a lot of funny stuff. I'm kind of a funny choreographer. I'm definitely not like a balletic choreographer by any means, but my choreography definitely has a sense of humor to it. So a lot of people who are doing comedies will use me either for film projects that need kind of like a strange, funny dance sequence, or I've done a lot of choreography for theater.
Right. That's awesome. Well, we're so happy to have you, Genevieve. Thank you so much for joining us today. Audience, please go to all of her sites. When the Fever Breaks is a movie that's coming out very soon. I had the pleasure of being involved in it as well. Genevieve Gearhart, thank you so much for joining us this weekend. Have yourself a very beautiful and pleasant Sunday.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, boys and girls, our next guest today will be Noel Vega. We're going to take a small little break. I hope you like reggae. I know you do. Here we go. Ah, I love reggae, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I live in Colorado. It has everything to do with the fact that I have a Hawaiian wife. No, I'm just kidding. I've loved reggae since I was a kid. My brother, I remember telling me I was the strangest person he's ever met in my life. I was wearing blue jeans, a Benny Goodman t-shirt, I was wearing my glasses for college, and I was wearing a tam that a lot of Jamaicans wear. And he was looking at me like, you are the strangest human being I've ever met in my entire life. That was Tony, my eldest brother. Our next guest today will be Noel Vegt. I've been waiting to have him on the show for a couple weeks now, and thank God we have him on today. So everybody, let's welcome the great Noel Vegt.
Good morning.
How are you doing,
morning.
Sir?
Can't
fantastic. I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
I was making a joke. I said, can't complain. Nobody listens.
Awesome. You're breaking up a tad bit, but we're going to go right into the show because we talked about this earlier today because it was kind of hard to hear certain things, but the audience can hear you perfectly fine. But let's start from the beginning. So you've got this gigantic resume here, but you started off fairly young, going back to 1997. So you did Once Upon a Time in China and America as line producer. Am I right?
Yes, that is correct. That was Jet Li's first ever shoot in the United States.
Oh, fantastic. How was that experience? I mean, that was a great movie.
I think that was a defining moment in my life because Murphy, as in Murphy's Law, was hyper, super active during that production. So it was everything that could go wrong did. And as a result of it, when it was a long shoot because it was a long feature. So 6 months after, I was like, you know what? I can do anything now. I think I did everything in that show. So, yeah, right. It was a very good learning experience with me having to solve all kinds of problems.
So anything that can go wrong will go wrong, is what happened on this film.
Yes. Unfortunately, we were shooting in location. We were in Texas. And we were shooting outdoors. We chose right. Texas at the time because there was a drought, similar to what we're having in California. And the yes. weekend before we started shooting, there was a deluge, and the water levels were back to normal after 5 years of drought over a weekend. So that's how we started.
Wow. Wow. And this is not filmed in America. This was filmed in Hong Kong, right?
No, we
oh,
were in Texas.
Texas.
Yeah,
oh,
this
my
is, like
gosh.
This is Jet Li's first movie he ever shot in the United States.
Yeah. That's incredible. Now, you did another movie called 18 Fingers of Death, which I've actually heard about. Now tell me about this film.
This is a comedy. James Liu starred and directed. the movie, and we had a lot of cameos.
It was a little mockumentary. It was a little mockumentary, right?
Yes, it was a mockumentary, and it's actually pretty funny. It was a low-budget movie that we had, like, a lot of martial artists come out, do cameos, Mark DeCoskos, Lorenzo Lamas, a bunch of other people. It was like, it was actually very funny. It's about this martial artist that nobody's ever heard of. Like, he's done, like, a 100-something movies, and he's always in the shadows, you know? 18 Fingers
right.
of Death. I would definitely look it up on video.
Oh, sure. And anybody, if you want to check out the great Alan Noel Vega, you can check out his IMDb very easy. And you'll see so many credits that it'll blow your brains out, going from actor to production manager to, you know, second unit director to assistant director to producer to stunts, which I cannot wait to get into because these are some of your favorite games in the entire planet Earth. And they also make connections to people we both know as well. But going back into maybe second unit directing or assistant directing, is this a field that you wanted to get into? Because I noticed that you started in 2006 in the Key and 2014 in Happy Endings. Now, we're talking about the TV show Happy Endings, right?
No, actually, that was a Bollywood movie that starred Saif Ali Khan, who's probably like, I guess they call him Tom Cruise of India or Bollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that show, Happy Endings. A lot of people I know hate that show to death. But so you start off in different perspectives of filmmaking, and then you go on to production manager. You go on to second unit directing. Was directing something you wanted to do, or was it something that you were just pulled into?
So far, I think my life has been an interesting journey in the sense that I go with the flow. I did not know I was going to get into the business, the film business, that is, until I all of a sudden found myself working for JFK, the movie, working for Oliver Stone, the director. So ever since then,
wow.
It's kind of like, it's always been, okay, what can I learn next? What can I learn next? And that's just what happens.
That's awesome. Like, producers, obviously, there as well. I mean, you've produced everything from Once Upon a Time in China to The Wedding Video, going all the way up to Lily, the UFC personal trainer, Hilltop Cemetery, Saving Lincoln, Hunting the Phantom, Secret Children, Gin, But Always, Golden Shoes, A Chance of Rain, Happy Ending, Flex, Certified, which is coming out in 2015. You're a line producer as well as a producer in that movie as well. How do these producer jobs come out for you? Or was it the people that you knew and trusted?
A little bit of both. Actually, my favorite film to date that I produced is The Citizen, which is available in instant view on Netflix. So let's talk about that one. The reason I want to bring that up is... that was Daily Variety mentioned it as a top 10 film at 2012 AFM, American Film Market. Examiner.com, which is the UK's Hollywood Reporter, named it a top 10 film of 2013, right up there with Gravity, Walter Mitty, American Hustle. So that was pretty cool. the way I started producing was just learning. I draw from my experience of Once Upon a Time in China and America, wherein I learned so much about handle crisis. Actually, let me tell you a short anecdote. I wanted to learn as much as I could about the business, so I kept asking my boss at the time, Alex Ho, who was Oliver Stone's producer. I said, well, I want another job. I want to learn something else. So one of the things he threw me into, the TV series called Wild Palms. And I asked for the most difficult job, which was, he said, work locations. So I was like, sure, I'll do it. Of course, I didn't know I had to find 256 locations in California. But one day, back then, you still spoke indoors. So Alex Ho was having a cigar with Jim Belushi. And he sees me checking out the location. He sees me. I say, hey, boss, how you doing? And he says, how you doing? Well, I'm doing good. So he goes, do you know what to do if there's a problem? I go, call you? He goes, no, Philly, fix it. So that kind of stuck. And I figured out what he did as a producer. So there was a problem, he was fixing it. And that's what
right.
he started. They started fixing problems, and everybody noticed, I guess, and said, hey, you want to produce this, you want to produce that? That's pretty much the short entry version.
Wow. That's intense. I mean, you work hard and you get all these benefits from that. That's fantastic. You go into your stunt work here, and I can't imagine by looking at this that you have to have a martial art background. Do you have a martial art background? You have to.
I have I have a little bit of martial arts, a little bit of dance. I wouldn't say I'd say jack of all trades, master of some. How's that?
Wait, which style did you prefer or did you gravitate towards?
I started learning kung fu. I think I was like 8, and then my shifu at the time sparred with a karate Shotokan guy, got his butt kicked. So I was like, maybe I should learn karate. So I'm not saying, you know, karate is better or kung fu is worse. It's just at the time my teacher was not as good as the karate teacher. So I started learning Obu Shotokan. Then when you compete, you score a point and point, stop. So it's like, okay, isn't that fun? Then I discovered boxing where, you know, you could actually wail at each other. So I tried that. That was a lot of fun.
Right.
Claim to fame is got knocked out by George Foreman. Sparring in his gym in Texas. Boy, that guy could punch.
You get knocked out by George Foreman?
Knocked down. Let me rephrase it. Knocked down. I did get up a split second later. I was just sparring, having fun, 16-ounce gloves.
You got hit in the face by George Foreman?
Well, yeah, he was my neighbor when I lived in Texas.
I would pay money for that. I would pay money for George Foreman to punch me in the face. That seems like the most awesome thing in the universe. How did it feel? Or how did it not feel when you woke up?
Actually, he was telling me, you know, I'm like 50-something pounds heavier than you. You should not spar with me. Spar with my brother Bob. I'm like, no, George, you're the champ. I just want to get in the ring with you.
Yeah.
So he goes, fine. So, you know, Bob went, bam. I'm picking myself in the cabin. Okay, now I know what it feels like. So it was, it was pretty silly, I guess. And he was telling me, you know, if I really hit you hard, I could have killed you. I'm like, I know, but I wanted to take your punch. Now I can say I took a heavyweight punch.
It's amazing to know that human beings like that exist with that much power. It's like, I can't imagine anything standing there and taking a hit like that. I mean, especially like a full blow hit from George Foreman. I mean, he's incredible. You know,
I kind of bobbing and weaving, but I stepped into his punch.
You know, what a lot of people don't know about George Foreman, what I love about George Foreman is, if you've ever seen Rumble in the Jungle, which was Muhammad Ali and George Foreman fighting in Africa, what a lot of people don't realize is that George Foreman showed up with German Shepherds. And a lot of people were anti-George Foreman. Actually calling him an Uncle Tom. And he was very sad, and he was crying at one point. And they're saying, you know, Muhammad Bumbaye, saying, yeah, you know, everything for Muhammad Ali. But what George Foreman didn't understand was that the dogs that he brought reminded them of the Afrikaners who conquered Africa. And that was just a sad thing to see, because I'm such an admirer of George Foreman. That he didn't understand, and his publicizers didn't understand, that this would give him a bad image, and it gave him a bad image. But to this fact of today, he's one of our greatest boxers' representatives, because he speaks on everybody's behalf. He's a happy guy. He makes money. He still contributes back. I like that guy a great deal.
He is. He's a very likable, affable person.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And you got hit by him, which is awesome.
Well, yeah, we were sparring, and I took a hit from him, and it was very strong.
That's awesome. So let's go into your stunt work, because there's just a, I mean, we can just bezel this stuff. I mean, you have James Bond, Everything or Nothing, the video game. You got Fight Club, the video game. State of Grace, the video game. I'm going to stick to a couple. True Crime, New York City, which is a great game. Shadow Puppets. Spider-Man 3, which I liked. Green Flash. Spider-Man Web of Shadows, which you worked on with Sean Piccinino, I'm pretty sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Call of Duty World
at
War. Yes. And then you go in the deadliest. Then we start going in the Deadliest Warrior area, where you play against William Wallace versus Shaka Zulu. You did the stunt choreography for that. Sean Piccinino played William Wallace. How did you get involved with the Deadliest Warrior, and how was your experience on that show?
Deadliest Warrior was a very interesting show in the beginning. I knew the executive producers, so they asked if I would help them out with the pilot. We did a pilot episode, which was Ninja versus Spartan. So to make a long story short, the pilot was a hit. Spike TV picked up the series. So we did one season, and we were number one in our time slot. Unfortunately, I guess, TV is, if you look at my resume, I don't have that much television. I do mostly feature films and video games.
Right.
Interestingly, I've worked on a number one scripted TV series and a number one reality TV series, Deadliest Warrior being the reality TV. And TV is a beautiful, wonderful, phenomenal world, but there's so much politics that the network was actually saying, hey, you know, we're number one on time slot. Can we reduce your budget and pay your guys less? We'll pay you the same. But, you know, we're wondering if you can help us save money. So I was like, no. You know, my guys went to bat for you. You know, we helped you get the pilot, which was number one. And then the first season was number one. And you want to reward my guys by paying them less. So I was like, no, I'm sorry. So needless to say, season two was a bit turbulent, and they didn't call me back for season three. Oh, my gosh.
They obviously loved you. I mean, you did Gladiator versus Apache, Viking versus Samurai, Spartan versus Ninja, Pirate versus Knight, Yakuza versus Mafia.
I know,
Green Beret.
That was all season one. That's why we were number one season one. Not because of me, you know, it was mostly because of my guys, you know, like. And that's why I thought, you know, there's no integrity if you're not going to take care of my guys.
Hey, Noel, in any of these fights, did you feel like it should have gone the other way? Like somebody should have won over somebody else?
Well, since the series is no longer, pretty much we never really understood how they would. What we did is we filmed both endings. We would film, you know, like for example, the Spartan winning and another possible ending with the ninja winning. And
right.
I guess somebody would throw darts, and whoever would land it, was okay, this is going to win. So there was, we never really figured out how they did that. And then we found out, or we guessed, that, yeah, they just take a flip a coin, something like that.
I remember when I was asked about the samurai, and I went, the samurai, or the ninja would not win. And the question was, why would a Spartan win? A Spartan was born to kill you. These guys, even though in groups, are incredible warriors. And ninja was mostly meant to be with several other people, companions, assassins, mostly groups in twos and threes. While Spartans are supposed to actually live through winter on their own and then kill wild beasts. So that was pretty insane. I very much loved those shows. My favorite ones were, of course, William Wallace. I love that one. I love the Gladiator one. I love the Pirate versus the Knight, because that made me laugh.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite
and
episodes.
And Jesse James versus Al Capone. Was that?
I said the Pirate versus Knight was one of my favorite episodes as well.
Yes. The Pirate versus the Knight?
Mm-hmm.
It was my mind that the Pirate would win, because the Pirate has no ethics, no moral compass. So they're just going to be evil about certain things. But you got more games coming out to this very moment. I mean, you've got Call of Duty Black Ops, which you did, UFC Personal Trainer, Prototype 2, Sleeping Dogs, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Then we go into your shorts and to your films, like Friend Request, William the Magnificent, Divorce Invitation? Is that called Divorce Invitation?
Yeah, that's
great name for a movie. That totally caught me off guard when I read that. Is that Divorce Invitation? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, that's a romantic comedy.
Go ahead.
And it's also available on Netflix Instant View.
Ah.
We shot that in L.A.
You shot in L.A.? Oh, that's perfect then.
Mm-hmm.
They call you from these games, Activision, and they call you in and they have you do these stunt coordinations. I see these pictures of you with people with, you know, the shiny balls all over their bodies, and they're acting out the parts. And you go from that, and then you go from your next short or movie. How is that transition for you, where you almost have complete control over physical movement, and now you have almost complete control over visceral movement, talking, walking, that kind of thing? What is the difference to you, and how do you feel about those two projects being compared to each other?
Well, I like balance, and the stunt world is basically physical. So it works out the body, and then the producing, the production managing works out the brain. So I enjoy it because there's good balance.
Right. And when you're going on to your next project from, like, let's just say Call of Duty Black Ops, and then you're about to do, like, the Deadliest Warrior, do you change the way you do the stunt choreography? Because I know that in the Deadliest Warrior, it's more about filming and what you visually can see. But Black Ops, it's more about, I would assume that a certain portion is about mathematics, because they have to be in certain places the cameras can catch them. But also the action has got to be appropriate. But also you have to think in the future of how it's going to look like in the game when it's cinefied or when it's made into reality. So is there a stricter balance between mocap and Deadliest Warrior?
I think it's all related. Primarily the choreography part. It's movement. In the case of movie and TV, it's what the camera sees. So you kind of move to favor the camera. But with video games, the movement is basically 360 degrees because it's motion capture, which multi-camera, so you can't really mess up a little bit. But thank God, you know, it's technology, so we can fix things. But it's basically movement and how you move to the audience, whether it's the camera or right. It's the video game world. This is where the variety of background comes in handy. So,
right.
So I was to give advice to get into my world, just learn as much as you can and have fun.
Well, you have a pretty gigantic resume, and I'm pretty sure that you've missed out at least 20 things in here that you have on your resume. If I was a young man in California or any other state, and I looked at your resume and I went, I want to blueprint this guy's, you know, life. I want to do almost exactly what this guy does. He does exactly what I want. How can I do that? Well, what's the first thing I should do? Let's just say I'm in the eighth grade right now. And these are millennials now. See, the thing is that millennials are looking at us for advice. And what happened is with our generation is we forgot to give them advice. So when these young actors go out now, they act crazy. And they act insane. I grew up in Los Angeles. And seeing how the Hollywood looks now and how the Hollywood looks now is in or before and how it looks now is insane to me. How? What would you say to a young person who's coming out to L.A. or New York on how they can follow your path and still have the calmness and the relaxedness that you seem to have, the confidence and the the empathy and the compassion? How can I get that?
First of all, I think what I would tell people, and I do tell people because I mentor college kids, but I always tell them, you can always do better than I did. If I can do it, you can do it, and you can do it better. So prove me right. But then, you know, you can't just tell them to do things. You have to show them, so I try. But I also challenge them because they have to learn to think for themselves.
Right.
And you always encourage, do better, do good.
Right.
I always tell them, there's no need to work hard. Work smart.
Right. You know, I'm first-generation American. My mother is Japanese and my father is Sicilian. And the great thing about being first-generation is you get the sense of, I don't want to work for somebody. I want to create something bigger, or I want to do something myself. And you get that sense because you feel like your parents came to this country for a very specific reason. Because in their countries, they had their families, they had their friends, they had everything they needed to exist within their realm of what they understood from child to death. Your family, are they first generation American? Are they from other countries? Did you find that to be a value in your existence? Tell me.
Yes, it is. Actually, technically, we're third generation, but my family, my brothers and sisters weren't born here. We're actually born in the Philippines, and we're mostly Filipino. We have Spanish and Chinese mix.
Yes.
But we're technically third generation because Grandpa was an officer in the U.S. Army, KIA. And that's how we became American. I'm at least half. But I understand what you're saying. Actually, I think it's kind of cool when you are a Hafa, as we call it, half of something, half of something else. And the Asian-European mixture is definitely very unique. Do you speak Italian? Parlo italiano. Did you learn any Italian? Nihongo hanasumasu ka? Japanese? Or you just grew up speaking English?
Right.
No, I was asking if you spoke Italian or Japanese and or.
I'm sorry?
No, I was asking you if you spoke Japanese or Italian, being that you're half Japanese and Italian.
Oh, do I speak it?
Yes.
Oh, I can understand Italian very well. I can understand European very well. My mother hid the Japanese perspective of our lives until we were a little bit older, 12, 13 years old, even though I was obsessed at the time. It's very weird about genetics because as a child, I was obsessed with Asia. And my mother did not tell me. One of the reasons why was coming to America was a very complex thing when she was a child because of World War II. So they gave certain fear factors in her existence to where it lived to this very day where she's still kind of scared, even though she's been in America for 60 years. It's still this kind of fear. Some of our family was stuck in the Manzanar camps, and you can find that down in downtown L.A. when you go out to the Pan-American Museum. You'll see a lot of Peruvians and Japanese people that were stuck in the Manzanar camps in California. So that's part of our history. I'm starting to get to know more Japanese now, mostly because I have a radio show that aims in the Asian territory like Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, and China. And also that's my birthplace is in Fukushima. So my grandfather was born in Fukushima, but it's a great birthplace. And I was I was born and I was raised in a Filipino neighborhood called Atwater Village in Los Angeles. So I grew up all around Filipinos, and I grew up learning Tagalog when I was very, very young, and knowing two dishes that I love the most, which is pancit and chicken adobo. And those are the best dishes on the planet Earth. And I remember,
classic.
You know, if Joyce Sarmiento is listening right now, and I'm pretty sure she's not. But I remember I went to a grade school reunion, and her parents didn't like me when I was a kid, mostly because I was white. And I went by their house later on in our lives, and I walked into their house. We're having a huge party, and they had four huge of those, foil packets that are filled with pancit. One was vegetable, one was shrimp or fish, the other one was chicken, and the other one was beef. And I walked up to Joyce. I'm like, wow, this pancetta is amazing, but it's full. Why isn't anybody eating? And she goes, oh, my parents made it for you. So I found that very interesting that, you know, growing up in an immigrant neighborhood and being first-generation American, to the Filipinos and to everybody else, I was white. And to white people, I was not white. But when you get older, everybody understands that we're all Americans. And the food just comes piling out.
Absolutely.
Did you, did you grow up with a lot of Filipino food or American food? What did you grow up with?
I grew up with Filipino food, Spanish food, and American food. I grew up in Madrid, Manila, and New York. So that kind of
awesome.
Food. I'm on a seafood diet. I'm on a seafood diet. I see food, I eat it.
Oh, really? How's that working out for you?
It's great, man. Seafood, eat food.
Well, Noel, I've been wanting... Go ahead and say it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Noel. What were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just commenting that I was on a seafood diet. I see food, I eat food.
Well, Noel, I've been wanting you on for months now, and finally we coordinated you to get on here. I am so happy to have you on. Tell me, looking at your resume, what is coming up next for Mr. Noel Vega? We see that Extinction has been announced. We see that In Embryo is in post-production. And then Jin, you being a stunt coordinator for that as well. We don't know the release date yet. Do you know the release date for Jin yet?
Well, Jin came and went already. He was released in April.
Okay.
Yeah, we were released right opposite Captain America, Winter Soldier, so I could tell you who won. So I would wait for it on DVD and Blu-ray at this point.
Oh, it's got Ray Park in it.
Yes.
Nice.
Little Ray.
So
you got
Serena Swan, Ray Park, William Atherton. You got Sybilla Dean, Farrah Tahir, Dominic Reigns. Ray Park plays Gabriel. That's going to be awesome. That is going to be awesome. So you got Jin there in Embryo. You did stunt coordinator for that. And then you have Extinction, and which has been announced. Are you getting ready to do that movie, or have you finished doing that movie?
That's further down the line. We still have, I think we might do Certified first. That is going to be directed by Billy Woodruff. He did like Honey, Drumline, you know, that guy. Good guy.
Nice.
So we might do Certified first. I do have,
actually,
interestingly enough, I'd say about 40% of people that work with me and hire me are foreigners. So I should have a feature film filming soon in Las Vegas, actually. It's kind of like the Indian Bollywood version of Step Up. So there's a lot of hip-hop and a lot of interesting choreography for that one. But that's probably going to be a first. And then Certified might be early next year. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Nice. Awesome. And we'll be seeing these things on posted on your Facebook as well as updated on your IMDb. Am I correct?
Yeah, I do have, there's a Chinese movie that we did in New York. We shot in New York, and it's actually playing in theaters now. It's called But Always. It stars Nicholas Say. Nicholas Say is a huge, colossal, gigantic star in Hong Kong, China. And it's the Emperor Group, Jackie Chan's company, distributing it. So it's playing in the U.S., mostly in Chinese-American areas like Alhambra, Monterey Park. All around the country was a lot of Chinese. Just figured I'd plug that in there.
Wow. Fantastic. I cannot wait. So, Mr. Noel Vega, how can we get in contact with you? After the show, ladies and gentlemen, after the show, how can we get in touch with Alan Noel Vega? You can find him on IMDb. That's a very obvious one. And just type in Alan first with Noel Vega. But, Mr. Vega, how can we catch you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those other avenues of social media?
Best would probably be Facebook. So yeah, I'm on Facebook. If you want to friend me, feel free.
Okay.
On IMDb, yeah, you know, my contact information is there too.
Awesome. Awesome. And we're looking forward to your next projects, one of them being Jin, the other being In Embryo, and Extinction. He's worked on so many other films, being stunt coordinator from producer, second unit director or assistant director, production manager, actor, director. He's done a lot of great things. And one of the relationships that we have that we share together is Sean Piccinino, and we know him quite well. And what a great guy to have in our corner.
Agreed.
Very
phenomenal.
Sorry, say again, Alan?
He's phenomenal. Wonderful human being.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. I've known him for a very long time, as well as you have, and I appreciate his friendship. So, you know, I loved having you on here today, Noah, and thank you so much for joining us today. I want to have you on in the future so we can talk more in depth about your career and more things that you're doing in the future, but at the moment, thank you so much for being on today, and God bless you, and have yourself a fantastic weekend.
You too. Thank you for having me, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Good.
All right, boys and girls, that was the great Noel Vega. Thank you very much for being on. Let's give him another round of applause there. Like I said, Blog Talk Radio right now is going through a couple of little changes, so my audio is a little weird, so it's kind of difficult to hear. Kind of difficult to hear him talk, which was a darn shame because he had a lot of great things to say. But I could hear most of it. Listen, boys and girls, I want you to remember this weekend that this weekend is about family. Be with your family, love your family. This week, I had a death in the family, unfortunately. My grandfather, my wife's grandfather, passed away. I met him when my grandmother passed away. I won't tell you too much, not necessary, but I'll tell you this. I'm incredibly grateful in this life for getting what the universe believes that I've earned instead of the universe giving me what they believe that I deserve. And the same thing applies for a lot of other things. Grandpa's now gone. It's now the end of that reign of Grandma passed away a couple years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and then Grandpa passed away just 3 days ago. He died at 92 years old. He had a nice long life. He was able to speak to his family before he passed away. He was able to feel the love and compassion from his family before he passed away. So we're happy. And I want you to be happy too. Next week, we're going to have another show. It's going to star Guy Grundy and one other person. I know I have them logged in somewhere. We'll have a great show. I wanted to have a show today just to share myself with you. Have a great day. Enjoy my weekend and celebrate. See, we can look at death two different ways. One is, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. The second way is, thank God, I had this person in my life for as long as they've been in my life. And that's the way I want you to see this. I want you to see this as, thank God, this person existed in my timeline. Thank God I got to hear this person speak. God bless you, sir. God bless you, Grandpa. It was good to know you. And I love you. And to all of you out there, thank you for listening on a great show, Cinema Files Radio. We had a great, great couple guests today. We had Genevieve Gearhart. Genevieve Gearhart was a great personality. Loved listening to her. Loved talking to her. When the Fever Breaks. I can't wait to see her in that movie. Next movie after that. Great movie after that is Genevieve Gearhart did When the Fever Breaks. Then we have Noel Vega. Check out Noel Vega on IMDb. You'll see all his stunt coordination. Anyways, I'm talking too much. Have yourself a great weekend. Love you very much, all of you. Thank you for joining us. God bless you. Have yourself a great weekend.